Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
We're excited to welcome to the show former pitcher for the New York Mets and Pittsburgh Pirates, Vic Black. Vic, thanks for joining us.
John, Billy, appreciate it. Man, this is exciting. As we have talked previous times before, I love volleyball. And so any chance to get to come on and talk and discuss the really cool things that are happening in sports is fun.
Yeah, I think you're a rare breed, someone who's pitched in the majors, but also has a volleyball background or an appreciation for it. How'd you get that appreciation?
It started off as a not so great appreciation. You know, you have three sisters, and there was a couple of years at one point that all three of them were traveling with club ball. And it was which tournament am I going to? Who am I chasing around? Whose backpacks am I carrying for the next 4 days? So it turned into, hey, can I just stay home with grandma and grandpa? But as I got to see my sisters develop through high school and then watch them play in college, all three got to play in college. My middle sister was a phenom. She played in Europe a couple of years. And now I thought I could get away from it. I married a volleyball coach. So yeah, it's more of a family deal. And it was just always such an appealing sport as far as like the dynamics of all of it. It was nonstop. There wasn't the sitting and waiting for something to happen. It was aggression. And yeah, I just love every part of it.
Cool. So you played a few years in the majors and now you're a pitching coach for the Pirates. What led you to stop playing and get into coaching?
Honestly, I ran out of opportunity, which was due to injury. So maybe just the trickle down effect of like having multiple injuries year after year. And all of a sudden you get to be 30 years old and teams are like, yeah, it's probably just not worth the cost. So we'll go find a 20-year-old. And that's just the way the sport goes. So entered 2019 with an Atlantic League team in independent ball and threw really well in the spring training period there. And they sat me down at the end like, Vic, man, we're sorry. We just don't have a spot. I mean, that was the first time I'd ever been cut really from a team. And I thought it would be worse. But from what I had gone through the previous 6-7 months, and then all the other years of training in the off season with different programs and different locations, there was this like, man, a whole nother door just opened the moment I walked out of that one of like, I know a ton of stuff not to do. So let me go help some other people avoid that stuff. And so just walked right into coaching, began my own business back home, worked a little bit at a private facility. And then when I got the opportunity to get back outside on a baseball field, I jumped at it. So that led me to where I'm at now.
Yeah. So that's the big topic we wanted to start out with is, you know, just healthy shoulders. How can we take care of them? And obviously you've learned through experience on like what you're saying, what not to do. And I think now you're learning what to do. So can you start us off with just maybe some of the simple, maybe more affordable things that coaches could be doing to help their athletes and maybe like a warm-up routine?
Yeah. So we like to look at, especially when we get new guys in. So this summer, I'll use for an example, we get new draft guys in. They've not been through any of our programming yet. They haven't been through any of our development phases, whatever that may be. So we evaluate them, assess them, but then we attack some low hanging fruit. Most high schoolers don't have arm care programs. So, and by arm care, I mean like a dynamic band warm up. We use crossover symmetry. I love them just because of the ease that they bring to their programming. They've got a chart that you hang on the fence or on the wall right next to the bands, and it walks you through reps, whether it's a activation period of using the bands, it's a recovery period of using the bands. There's a backside where they do have a strength portion. So there's some longer sets, different movements. Those are like beginning things for these guys. And then also looking at activation for the body through the movements, because I'm sure just like in volleyball and watching high school volleyball and remembering what it looked like in warmups, like, you know, you go through it because I'm slamming the ball over my head. I'm going to serve a few to my buddy. And then all of a sudden we're going to go through some pepper. And then we line up and the outside, just everybody runs through, hits once. And then we break in the middle, right side out. And so it's kind of like, we're warm to hit now. Well, we like to think of our activation as warming up the body in the movement that we're trying to perform. So rather than using our catch play, or in volleyball's instance, like those periods of attacks that you get prior to the game, instead of using those to necessarily warm up to do it, we would like to be warm already so we could go in and attack what we actually want to target. So those types of low hanging fruit things are a lot of what we do. So the crossover symmetry, it's a fairly inexpensive, group. Now there are ways that you can certainly start to blow out the budget and some higher tracking tech, but yeah, those are the little things that we like to look at, increasing scat mobility. We do reverse throws. And I think this is something that we're going to implement with some of Amanda's players, my wife's. It's where we actually take a 2-pound ball and we run through deceleration patterns, because for throwers, the body is not going to accelerate the arm to a point where it can't stop it. And if it does, it won't do it for long. And so the deceleration pattern of pronation after release or into contact as a volleyball player into pronation is really important to keep the back of the shoulder and the scaps turned on to decelerate the arm, rather than the bicep tendon hanging on for dear life because you go palm up or supination, which can cause labral issues all over the place. So yeah, there's a lot of really inexpensive methods, waiter walks with light dumbbells where we're working on co-contractions and basically a 90-90, like how a waiter would hold a tray next to their head carrying food. Yeah, those are a few right off the top that I think are difference makers if you're just looking for a place to start.
Cool. And if you do have more resources and money to burn, what's some equipment you'd recommend to kind of invest in shoulder health?
So we'll start with the crossover symmetry. So I love the bands, but they offer through Arm Care, which is a branch company of theirs, a dynamometer. So what it allows you to do is through an app linked with crossover symmetry's programming, it's a little disc that's a pressure plate. And so you can put yourself in isometric internal rotation, isometric external rotation. You can measure force output and it tracks fatigue levels. So let's say y'all have played 2 matches in a weekend and you go on to Monday and it's like, hey, I don't know how hard we really want to push them today. Well, we can measure that and get instant feedback and you can start to see trends of like, hey, they're really not recovering when we hit them 2 days in a row. Like they are just fatigued. They can't put any force into this. And so then that data is transferred into the band program and it tailors it to address the certain things that it's picking up. And so you get more of a specific band routine through that device there. Certainly motion capture would be huge. I know that Hawkeye was used in the Olympics with volleyball this year, mm-hmm. which is what we use in our stadiums. And going forward next year, we're going to have it all of our affiliates. Now it's $500,000 and it does not come with someone that runs it. So, wow. Yeah. And I'm sure with volleyball, the data is so new that using it would be maybe not a great idea right off the bat because you just don't know what you're reading.
But down the road, that could be, seems like so much potential with that.
Heck yeah. Well, and there's so many similarities in throwing and we'll get to it and the volleyball swing that there's probably some of those biomechanical markers you can find through like mocap systems, that Hawkeye data that would allow you to more tailor fit some of your development and target points within the arm cycle. Mark Pros are awesome. They're an E-stem type machine, but they run a different wavelength. And so it allows for longer prolonged periods of wearing it. So we have guys that will wear it for a couple hours and it just, it's a recovery device, put it on shoulders, put it on elbows, hips, quads, whatever it may be. Those typically run like 400 to 500 a kit, but they're really reliable.
I know this is a really, you know, personal issue with you. You experienced, you know, injuries and you know, it feels like when I talk to you, you're really on a mission to help others, you know, so they don't have to go through some of the pain you had to go through. But if you could go back and reflect on, you know, the mistakes you made or maybe coaches made that led to your injuries, you know, what are some of the big things that, you know, you think you wish you would have done or wouldn't have done?
Well, certainly disclaimer, I think that all young coaches have the best in mind for their players and they are giving them the best information that they have. Mm-hmm. And so I look back and am appreciative of them taking the time to just teach me the game. Now, knowing the movement aspect of it to the degree that we know now and with the information, there's a lot of it that I wish would have been different. Certainly some of the way we teach throwing, which is a real ball dominant type arm swing. So basically you're allowing the hand to guide the arm through the swing, as opposed to what we know now to get a cleaner load. We want scap protection and we want shoulder abduction. So the easiest way to do that really is if you were thinking about punching the wall, or I say somebody, but I get some laughter every now and then. I'll just, hey, imagine your worst enemy. Let's do that. So there's some of those like mechanical things. Understanding cues is something that was really difficult for me. And I think for a lot of players, especially young players that don't know themselves quite as well, we'll hear a coach give us a cue or an idea and we want to try it because we want to honor them in the position that they're in and trying to help us. But oftentimes, more times than not, actually, those cues are a broad stroke to an individual that's completely unique. And so how I take it's different than how you would take it, John, and how you would take it, Billy. And we might end up with three different movements using the same cue. And it's all of a sudden like, man, if all I'm using is that one cue, then a third of the time it's going to work, which you start getting into big numbers and that's really tough. Those are tough odds. So there's some things like that, that I think looking back, I'd like to have known more about, but grateful for the opportunities I've had thus far and the people I've met to help me through that. And a city that's embracing new stuff back home. And so it's fun.
Yeah. So if you're comfortable trying to go into the volleyball side of it, what have you noticed in terms of like arm swing mechanics that coaches can be looking out for that might lead to shoulder problems down the road? I know this is hard on a podcast to describe, but maybe you could try to paint a picture of some things that, yeah, coaches could be looking out for.
So one thing that I notice, and this is typically in younger players, and especially in women's volleyball, is out of the approach and the jump into the attack, there's I've read y'all have specific names. So there's like an arm circle, there's a high bow and arrow, a low bow and arrow, and then there's another one that's like basically what a middle, maybe like that quick snap.
Yeah, snap. Yeah, I think that's so like from George Giotsis did a paper that went through those different. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And so my thought in watching this, and we deal with this when we have guys that like to do towel drills, where they'll set a target out in front of them. They want to slap it with the towel because they're trying to get extension of the arm, the hand into release. The problem is the goal is to slap that object and it's facing straight up. So I'm going to slap straight down. Well, what if my arm mechanics or swing are not accommodating to that process? So as I watch, the thought is, and this is my own process, and we want the attack to have a downward angle because we got to keep it in the court. So to create downward angle, we either have to get on top of the ball to hit it down, or you have that high snap. And the easiest way is like if your arms were straight out in front of you like a mummy and you just lift the hand above your head like your straight arm. And then from that position to try to make contact with a ball above your head, in a sense, in that line or slightly out in front, puts the shoulder in a really unstable position. And so that's one of the main things that I noticed, just because there's the similarities with hand dominant arm actions in baseball as well, because you can get that scap load, but with y'all making contact with an object that's not already in your hand, so you're not creating momentum with it, you're having to basically slap your hand into a wall above your head to create it. It puts the shoulder in a super compromised spot. The deceleration would be really one of the only other things. And that's where I see a lot, because you run into the net, like if you fully extend, like go into it, you'd hit the net, try and stay out of the net. So ways to avoid it would be perhaps now I go in to attack the ball and I lift the shoulder and I basically curl the arm across the chest if I'm going in from one side. Now you'll see ones that'll pronate and they go down to their side, which I think is a pretty clean method because you'll see the trunk rotate with it. But that supination puts a lot of stress on the bicep to decelerate the arm. And that bicep tendon, the one, is connected right on top of the labrum. So that's where we get our labral tears, because that tendon just has had it and it pulls it right off. One other thing, posture. Posture is something with everyone that we notice, even in our throwers, because we're so internally rotated. because we're throwing, we're accelerating internal rotation. So without proper scap movement and stability, you start to get that curl, and now we're eliminating external rotation in the shoulder. So the elbow starts to drive forward early. And so you're just, the compensations over time just build up.
I just sat up a little straighter.
Oh man.
And what are your thoughts on shoulder position when you're driving, like when you're loading, getting back? Cause I know when I was a kid, I hear coaches say like, oh, high elbow mm-hmm. back here. And now we're kind of learning maybe it should be a little lower. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So when we're teaching this to a baseball player, we'll do preset positions where it's basically, we're just below the shoulder with the elbow. So we don't want it straight up because we start to get the trap turning on, which pinches space inside the shoulder joint. And we already are running out of space when we're going overhead just due to structure of our skeletal system. So really in my thought of it, it's loading at like a 45 degree angle there, as opposed to it being a lift up. So you can still get it up because the scap loads and the humerus sets, and then it unspirals out of it. So I certainly would rather see the high elbow pull than the straight hand lift and go, just because there is some scap stability that happens initially to help support that move.
I think the straight pull, that would we call that like a pike, Billy, just so people like a piking motion when people do that, like straight arm. Is that what you'd picture?
Yeah. You're not rotating. You're kind of like, yeah,
like straight arm kind of slapping. Like crunching. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which is in a lot of the younger players. I see a lot, right. Like the young, where they can't really jump super high yet. The net's already really freaking high. And like, how do I get it over? I just run up underneath it and try to pop it.
Right.
Yeah. So if you are a youth coach, what do you think creates those ineffective arm swings? You mentioned that maybe they can't jump as high, the net's high. Is there anything you would do to kind of get them swinging, like any kind of environment you can shift?
Yeah. And so you said it right there. I think the environment plays a big role because you are at some sort of a constraint in that the net is really high for that younger age group. We run into it because we don't use smaller baseballs that weigh less. Now you guys actually use a smaller volleyball that's lighter too.
Yeah. It's like half the weight usually. Yeah.
Yeah. So like there's some help there for that younger development. But with us, we got guys trying to throw two fingered and their hands aren't big enough to hold the ball. Like, so we're running into things like that. Bases are too far, mounds are too long. So there's compensations to get the job done. Now, some would probably argue that that's excellent for development because you're allowing the organism to find a way to accomplish the goal. Just at that age, it makes it really difficult because of the habits that can be created. So certainly vertical jump has a lot to play into it. I think the more I think about it as well, the ability to approach the ball going to the net as opposed to under and up to attack, because now you're putting a ton of stress on lumbar spine and thoracic to be able to get some extension through the back to have power. When you approach from away, you allow yourself to actually gain some separation of the trunk, which is what you really want to create a lot of power, not that just like pure crunch. What else? The arm cycle, I think, is a byproduct of what they're trying to do is just get the ball over the net, not hit it in the net. And so you get that like lift up and hit it straight. Like everything is like, hey, we want to be on top of the ball. We want to hit it pure.
I think the other one you already mentioned too is the coach feedback, right? Like Billy had said, you know, coaches are always saying reach high or elbow high. And so I think that's going to lead to, you know, making that sort of adjustment as a player. So yeah, I can see there's lots of different ones. So what can we do? So it seems like the two most dangerous ones, we'll call it like the high, like the piking motion and then the high elbow. What do you think we could do to help players change these mechanics so they can have a healthier arm swing? And is it different for the two different, I don't know if we want to distinguish, like for the piking one, there's a different recipe.
Yeah. We like to think about, I call it like an elbow lead type load. So if we allow the elbow to guide the hand into load, there's a clean, typically a cleaner setup there. If I explain it this way, so we want to carry the weight in like our bigger joints. So if I were to hold a dumbbell, I would allow my shoulder to keep it tight. My shoulder would carry all the weight. The moment I start to extend out and lift with my hand, now I have all the stress in my hand trying to hold it up. So it's really tough for that shoulder to stabilize. So the idea of when we go into that arm swing, we're carrying the weight through the shoulder. We'll keep tension out early, which does give us a good opportunity when we're throwing. As far as volleyball goes, the progression that I've seen and have done some with a few of Amanda's players is we'll start going towards the wall. We'll hit towards the wall. This allows us to preset, really control the environment per se, and put them in a position where they can accomplish it consistently right off the bat, because we need them to know what it feels like to do it. Because chances are when they do that pike position type swing or the high elbow, they'll feel like maybe they're doing it, but they're not. And so you're able to show them that. From that point, you can transition. And my thought would be to a high box at the net. So now you're giving them the visual of where they want to be with their body and contact to appropriately attack the ball at the net. Now, this is going to be different the younger ages, certainly, because, again, we run into the nets high and a lot of players just can't jump real well at that age. But then you slowly back off and you go into a two-step shuffle where you're self-tossing. So you're just able to control a lot of this stuff, but you can also preset the arm where it's like, I'm almost, like we talked about earlier, like going to punch somebody. So I'm going to hold it right here. I'm going to two-step shuffle, toss it in the air and go out of that. And they'll start to feel the rhythm. We do a lot of overhead medicine ball throws. So that keeps the arms real tight, close to the body, but it allows for trunk exercises to feel the tension between the hips and the trunk, because real separation comes from the shoulder of the arm swinger or the swinging arm and the opposite hip. And so if we can create tension between those two, we're good. And that's another thing as to why I think some of the arm swings get bigger, is they can't create that tension because they approach chest forward and never actually get rotated. So now how am I going to find that tension? I'm going to extend my arm further. So now I've created tension from my hand to my hip, which I can get a lot more if I go that way, but it's also unstable. So just reverse engineering would be a really good start. I've got some things that we videoed that allow for that progression to be seen as you go.
Nice. And you do a lot of work with aqua bags. Can you explain what they are and why you use them?
I will give my best impression of Franz Bosch and Paul Vetter and those guys that have implemented and introduced this into at least the baseball world.
You
got
to do it in a Dutch accent then.
Okay. Well, now that's my problem. I should have had Bart maybe tune in for me. So the simplest way I know how to describe them is, so we've got, they're large inflatable balls or tubes. And by large, I mean, the tubes are like 2.5 to 3 feet long, probably a half a foot in diameter. So now we're looking at something that we inflate and we add water to. So it's not enough just to have the air in there, because we can control that really well. When you add the water to it, now we get an unstable weight implement. So we have to control that, because if we tip too far to the left, we all know that the weight's going to go, water's going to go to the left. It's going to pull us. So we have to control those movements. So I use them primarily as post-activation potentiation devices, essentially. So there's a lot of studies behind doing isometric pulls in, like, let's say deadlift for 3 to 5 seconds, and then going straight to a deadlift pull off the ground, and the firing pattern being more readily available, or the energy for that. So we'll use the aqua bags in core stability type movements where we'll shake them in front of us to get everything firing and stabilizing. We'll ditch it, and then we'll go into a throw or a med ball toss where now we have primed that system to respond in a really quick dynamic method. Because for us to be super explosive, we have to remove slack out of the body. And this is a really good way to do that and teach the body how to get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, and you've sent me some of these, the videos where you do it, where it's really, it's an integrated process. It's not like your players are lifting weights for an hour and then they come out and do their pitching work. It's they're doing the aqua bag once, some sort of a lot, or a med ball where they're doing some sort of like throwing motion where it forces them to keep the ball tight. And then you will toss them a baseball or a weighted ball and go back and forth. Yeah. Could you go more into like why you do that and how that works?
Yeah. So just recently did some programming for a catcher of ours who had gotten really used to using his lumbar spine to get external rotation in his shoulder, which is an interesting thing to think about. But if the shoulder can't externally rotate, it's going to find somewhere else to get that layback. So it'll probably go to the elbow first, then it'll go to the back. And so you'll see kind of a chain effect. So for him, as we went through his prior warm-up, we would have him get the width of his squat that he would be at the bottom as a catcher. And we'd start standing up and we would shake it and he would slowly sit down into the squat. And as he hit the bottom, we would ditch it. I would toss him a ball and he would go through like a throwdown, like a catcher throwing out a runner at second. Well, that movement of him engaging the core, the glutes, everything around stabilizing that ball and not letting it shake him carries over in that short window that we'll use into the throw. So the body's like, oh yeah, I know how to fire that right now. As opposed to, hey, I want you to work on your throwing technique today. Like, we're going to really focus on not bending your low back, which is a really difficult thing to have somebody think about when they're trying to throw. It's a CNS stimulation really too, which is solid because when you're trying to teach a new motor pattern, neurological stimulation plays a really big role in that because those are pathways that the body remembers to do that movement from the first time maybe you did it or the first 20 times you've done it. And so you coat those pathways over and over, and now we're trying to break it. So we want to stimulate the central nervous system in that. And last, it's a distraction. I mean, a lot of guys want to overanalyze what we're trying to do when we're doing corrective work. And so to keep them from doing that, we throw in other implements because now I'm like focusing on this thing, not making me fall off the mound. He just threw me a baseball. Now I'll huck and go. It's like, yeah, that was it. What'd you think about? Well, I was just trying not to get abused by this water bag. So yeah, those are the two primary things that I use it for and what I see the benefit being.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense to me when I watch those videos. Like, gosh, this is great. Do you have any ideas on how you would implement them in a volleyball perspective? I don't know if they would work with some of the arm swing mechanic stuff we talked about. Yeah, I'm throwing this one at you kind of out of nowhere, but if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so there's a couple that bounce right into my head at the moment. And this is more for like platforms and receiving.
That works. That's great.
Yeah. Cause you're grounded. So that's certainly where I have a better understanding as far as I don't do a lot of this stuff in the air. Mm-hmm. So something along like what we had done with Joe with a back row player, we're like, hey, their platform's just shaky. They don't get their butt down, just poking it. Like now we're wide in that stance and we're dropping into it with the tube. And we ditch it and then someone hits to us and we're right there in this like strong position. Or we've got backpacks that have the tube on them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you could even run shifts in the back, like with those on, because that water is going to slosh around. And so when they change directions, plant to center themselves, like you have to be locked into the ground or it's just going to slowly just tip you sideways. There's probably a bunch of other ways to use it for setters as far as balance off of one foot when extending the arms above the head, because that's a ton of core control. We do it a lot of one-legged like step ups into extension with the tube and sticking it above our head, because that just forces you in this tough mode. I've watched a ton of setters running back sets or on the run towards the net or off and trying to change directions and redirect energy. So there's certainly application there for it.
What about after practice or after games? Are there any routines that we could be doing to keep our shoulders healthy?
Yeah, the biggest one would be eccentric work. And so we accelerate and accelerate and accelerate. And like at the beginning, we want the brakes to be really strong, resilient part of our shoulder. So, I mean, let's say you finish that two matches in a weekend and that Sunday, we're really wanting to stay in a parasympathetic state. You can begin that process post game on that Saturday by running through, if you end up doing crossover symmetry, you have some kind of band work where every rep that we do is a 1 second out, but a 5 to 8 second return. So we're actually controlling the movement back to its origin. That is one of the go-to things that we do with all our guys day after games or day after bullpen days. We try to keep the body from getting super active again, because we do want to maximize recovery. And that's one of the things that we can hit.
What would be the count on like, so post you're doing the eccentric, pre with the crossover symmetry with bands, would it be more dynamic? What would you
do? You could probably do like a 2 and 2.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to fatigue yourself prior to, which is why their activation and a lot of ours is set up the way it is. Like, just because we're not trying to build strength prior to throwing or hitting, you know, that's an off season deal. That's a rehab type deal. Arm manuals, we do a ton of these. And so when I say arm manuals, we'll have our players, they go in, they'll see an ATC, they'll lay on the table and they'll actually put their arm through a range of motions, internal, external, sideline, internal, external, extension overhead, thumb down to thumb to the hip. And so you have this cross pattern, and the athletic trainer the whole time is bouncing their arm around. So they're actually having to stabilize. Body blades are a type of this type of deal. We use shoulder tubes. That would be another thing to add, because they have a 360 degree control, not just the two ways back and forth. You have to dynamically control it, or else it'll just take over.
John uses a Shaco 8. Is that still legit?
As seen on TV.
Yeah. no comment there. Yeah.
That's great. Arm manuals. We do have like throwing socks. So there are these nylon bags we'll strap to our wrists and our hands inside of it. And we'll use this a lot in rehab, but for post, you could probably go through with like a 2-pound plyo ball, so like a plyometric ball inside that bag, and go through arm swings post, like two sets of five. And that bag, since it's catching the ball, it turns the decelerators on right out of release. And so you're getting an extended amount of deceleration work. Plus, there's a guide into pronation, because the implement's heavier. The body's just going to naturally want to put itself in that deceleration pattern. The Mark Pro, like we had talked about earlier, it's huge for recovery. Like I said, we got guys use it 2-4 hours sometimes. They swear by it. I mean, shoulder cars, things of that mobility type deal. FRC is a real big deal for us. Functional range conditioning now. So yeah, those are the things post-game. I think you ought to at least take a shot at.
What about lacrosse balls, foam rollers? What do you think about doing soft tissue work after maybe some of the eccentric stuff?
Yeah, I love soft tissue work. The idea to get the muscles to relax so that they're not pent up and angry at you, especially post-playing, is brilliant. We do a ton of dry needling as well with our guys. We have some that like cupping, some that use Graston, some that, and so there's a lot of those tools. And I think just like cues, depending upon the individual, you're going to get a different response most of the time from them, and they'll find what they like. So yeah, as far as foam rollers go, great for muscle relaxation, I believe, because you're stimulating a lot of blood flow to areas. Lacrosse balls I use for trigger point throughout the shoulder. There's like 6 points around the shoulder girdle and scap and lat that I like to hit. And that typically allows for that joint to open back up after it's been abused basically for an entire match or game.